Welcome to this week's episode. Today we have on the show someone who is just phenomenal, Dr. Shefali. Dr. Shefali is an international speaker, a clinical psychologist, and the author of soon to be three books. The very first, the foreword was written by the Dalai Lama. She's been on Oprah multiple times. Her second book, Out of Control, offers a unique and brilliant perspective on why traditional means of discipline don't work. If you Google her and check her out online and see one of her speeches, she's so inspiring. Anybody with children is going to be blown away. But if you don't have kids or you do have kids, I think you're going to love this episode because it's really all about authenticity, this podcast, ultimately. And what I think is amazing about talking to Dr. Shefali is hearing about how our lives start off when we're little and potentially where that path from an authentic or an inauthentic life split happens, right? How come some of us become pleasers or aggressors or get lost while others seem to navigate a path of authenticity? Where did this shift happen and why do some of us and not others? Dr. Shefali explains that when we're younger, our parents, even though they don't mean to, they project their own view of who you should be to such a degree that you don't have an opportunity to find your true self, right? It makes sense. So because you really lack the embodiment of your true self, you never get the opportunity to explore it without these projections of who you should be or how you should act or, you know, what your life will become. We check out, we disconnect, and we lose our authentic voice. Such an incredibly interesting conversation with her, one that really stuck with me. I know you're going to love it. If you're interested in her upcoming book, she's got The Awakened Family coming out. You can pre-order it on her website right now, drshefali.com. That's S-H-E-F-A-L-I.com. I promise she will not disappoint. Thank you so much for listening. If you like what you hear, hop over to iTunes, leave a review, or jump over to our website, send in a question. Thank you so much for listening. Welcome, Dr. Shefali. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, thank you, Laura. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I love your work so much. You've inspired me and motivated me to be a better parent. I thought maybe today we could start off by you explaining to all of us, you know, what is this conscious parenting thing really all about?
Well, you know, I'm a therapist, a psychologist, so I see a lot of people in my office who experience pain and dysfunction in their families, which really carry through their entire lives. So this inspired me to ask some questions about, you know, why is it that parents who love their children so much feel so paralyzed in building that close connectivity that they obviously yearn for? And I began to notice that it's really the parental ego that gets in the way, and ego not just by, in a simplistic sense of being narcissistic, but the ego in terms of the parent being cut off from their own true self. And when a parent is cut off from their own true self and are operating from ego, which is a kind of false sense of self, a self that has been created by society or parental conditioning, which is largely unconscious and not connected to who the child that they truly were when they were growing up, then that ego begins to become an obstruction in their relationship with their children. And conscious parenting is all about becoming aware of that ego in its many layers and, you know, its many manifestations of fear, anxiety, control, perfectionism, obsessions, sabotaging, and seeing how those manifestations of the ego then get projected onto the child and then how the child then begins to act out because of it.
And I've heard you say our children are our teachers. They're like our awakening agents, which I just love. I believe that this is true of my son. I think he's my spiritual teacher. Can you elaborate more on that?
Yeah, I think because our children are so close and intimate with us, or we feel that closeness and intimacy with them because we've birthed them, or, you know, had that, adopted them, or been with them for so long, that proximity then creates this deep investment in them, right? So we're so invested in them. And in that investment, which brings about a great amount of love, the trap there, though, is that it also brings about a great amount of delusion that we possess them, that we own them. And to them, we can do things that we wouldn't dare to do with a friend or with a spouse, with a partner. And so the trap that brings about the ego even more in action also allows the greatest opportunity to let go and learn from it, because they're so intimate that they become our mirrors moment by moment. So while they show us our shadow and our ugliest self, or the ego in full action, they also allow us to say, hey, I'm destroying my child, or the one who I love the most, I'm causing them so much pain by my unconsciousness. Do I dare to use this relationship that means so much to me to grow up myself and to wake up out of slumber and to dare to make the changes so that I can preserve the connection I want to have with this person?
And if that doesn't happen and the parent is putting that ego self onto the child, I've heard you describe that the child sort of splits away, that they protect their deeper self.
Yeah, they do. They have to survive, right? Like we all have to survive. So what are the ways of surviving? So the main way is that we forsake or abandon our true self, or, you know, that poor true self didn't even have a chance to fully develop because it was having to, you know, constantly fend off the projections of the environment. And the more unconscious the parent is, the greater they put these projections, this heavy mantle, the second skin, the third skin on the child. So the child could never really develop their true skin. So when that happens, the main way is to split off. But the split off can look different in a different child, right? In some children who are extra sensitive, maybe they develop the persona of a pleaser or a fixer or an accommodator. Or if the child is slightly more, you know, badass, then the child could be a, could be a rebel or a fighter or an aggressive person. Or if the child is artistic and dreamy, maybe they become ADHD-like and they become distracted and unfocused, or they go off into reveries. So it depends on how it shows up for each specific child. But what we begin to see is that the child is lacking an embodiment. They become disembodied in some way, and they're not fully present and owning and fully engaged with their life. And we begin to see boredom and listlessness and a denial and a checking out. And instead of the parent then becoming more reactive and getting more angry with their kid or putting more projection, what we need to ask instead is, whoa, why is my kid disconnecting? Why is my kid not engaged? How can I help my kid become more authentically themselves? What can I do to help them own who it is they are, even if it's inconvenient to me?
Yeah, because usually when the child acts out in those ways, we try to fix that, right? I mean, we compulse over the behavior and we get angry with our children and we push into the part that they're showing us instead of trying to reach back in, would you say, to find the authentic child that has split away?
Yeah. So say your child comes home and does really badly on a test. The instinct is, of course, to get upset or to fix it. But instead, how about take a pause and then ask the child, well, first, how does the child feel? And the child will give you some, you know, huge confabulatory explanation, such as the teacher is terrible, or everyone did badly, or I was just feeling crappy that day. And all of those could be true. And then we keep working with the child and we say, but okay, how do we now create, is this the goal you wanted? How do we create the goal that you want? What is your goal? And in this way, we connect the child to their grade and make them develop a relationship to their success versus making it about, well, you just have to get an A grade, or this is the only way that you're going to succeed in life is if you go to an Ivy League school. No, maybe the kid is okay with it and that's okay. You know, you can't, as a parent, decide what's okay for your kid. You can definitely create the conditions for them to want to have a better score, such as by saying to them, okay, you know, you can't be on your phone when you do your homework, or I don't see you putting in the effort, so I'm going to help you put in the effort by being there with you. But you can't want them to have the same feelings about success and failure as you do. The best you can do is create an engagement within them to want it, meaning they have to like success. They have to see value in the math. They have to connect to effort. And we have to kind of step back and allow those processes to take place versus simply saying you need to get an A grade and you're going to be punished if you don't get an A grade, right? So it takes a lot of restraint from the parent to step back and allow the child to develop a relationship with healthy eating, with friends that treat them well, with this positive self-image. You know, they have to see the value of these things for themselves versus us just shoving it onto them. And then later on when they're in college and we're not there to shove it onto them, kind of everything falls apart. You know, so these are the times in our home when we're together that we get to plant the right seeds and build the right roots rather than just creating the beautiful ornamental tree, which will then fall apart because it doesn't have the steady foundation.
Yeah, I mean, because it's so easy, right, to say that your case, the child comes home with that bad grade and they start going on about how the teacher wasn't fair. And then we can, you know, jump in and start arguing with them. Well, how could you say that about the teacher? And you need to show respect to the teacher, right? And it's all sort of beside the point, if I'm hearing you correctly, that this child is struggling and we want to help them through the struggle, get them connected to what the meaning is for them, not just argue with them about something that they're bringing to the table because they don't know how to cope with their feelings.
Exactly. So we have to help them maneuver the landmines of their own psyche and what they're bringing forward and allow the space for that to even emerge, right? Because our instinct is just to beat them down with something because that's our ideal of how things should be.
And so as the parent out there, the reason that this is troubling, right, and this is a lot of the work that I think about is because as a parent, I'm being triggered by that child. I have so many views, baggage, ideas of what this should be. And instead of dealing with my child, I'm dealing with all of my own emotions. Is that right?
Correct. And then the child doesn't have the space and energy to kind of, or the tools or the skills to kind of navigate their own inner terrain. And then, you know, we've done them a disservice because we just put on them something that works for us or that is valuable to us, but haven't really taught them how to maneuver it for themselves so that they can then come to it on their own and own it. And then it'll last them even longer in life than if we were just to slap it on them. They comply, but then when we're not there to monitor it, it all falls apart.
Because I've heard you say that at the end of the day, what the child is looking for, and I think all the adults listening can relate to this, is this question of, do I matter? Am I worthy? Right? And wanting approvals. And in my own work, I just talk to adult after adult who are struggling with these deep feelings within themselves, right? And that it's kind of heartbreaking to think that all of us at some point, because we love our parents so much and we want the relationship so much that we've hit our authentic self because we don't feel we matter. We don't feel we're worthy in exchange for the relationship that is hurting us in a lot of ways.
Yes. But as parents, we have to seize the power we have in the moment. And it's in these ordinary little moments where we get to say, okay, what matters right now? Does it matter that my child feel rejected for an external validation of a grade? Or can I separate the external validation at this moment and let my child step into their own journey, their own body, and their own relationship with their experience versus me putting it onto them? So it's in those very subtle moments where we get to make choices and step back and say as parents, you know, whatever your daughter or your son's name is, Jake, Jack. And this is, of course, after they're 7 years old or 6 years old, so they can comprehend. And you say to them, look, these are the things that go into getting this result. I can help you get these results. This is the effort it's going to take. These are the conditions I will create in the home, such as I'll create a quiet place. I will be there to assist you. I will give you healthy, nourishing food so you can get to that goal. I will drive you to the place that will help you get that goal, or I will give you the tools and skills in that subject matter, whatever it is. But at the end of the day, you're going to have to put in the effort and care enough to get that goal. Mm-hmm. I'm not invested in that goal because I think you're perfect and whole and complete the way you are. if you want that goal, I'm here to assist you. And always providing that assistantship and the space and the room for the kid to grow into it, but not telling the kid inadvertently or unconsciously that I will approve of you only if you create that external goal in your life. And I think parents sometimes forget how important it is to teach children that I see you, I care about you, and you matter to me, whether you get that A grade, the B grade, you're a soccer star, or you're just in your room reading a book or doing nothing. I validate you and I honor you for who you are. And the more we can put emphasis on that validation without the external accoutrements, our children will grow more sturdy, implanted in who it is they are, and they won't be crumbling if they don't get the A grade or they don't get the gold medal. And your meter gauge, your thermometer measurement of how sturdy your child is, can they tolerate getting a C grade, or can they tolerate being told by a teacher, you didn't try hard enough, I need you to try harder? Can your child tolerate that kind of backlash and take it in stride? They only will be able to do that when we have sufficiently told them that who it is they are is more connected to how they show up in their own lives than by these external accoutrements.
So powerful, and in some ways so easy to think parenting really is about focusing on this one goal instead of chasing after all of these external things that we're hoping to have our child do, and more soccer, and you know, I signed him up at age 10 and it's 3 years too late and I have to catch him up, and all this stuff that we worry about if it's really just about helping them develop that internal sense. So for the person out there who spent their childhood and wasn't seen, right? And now they're downstream and they don't feel that sense of worth and they can't really connect to that inner voice. What advice can you give them to reconnect?
Okay, so first, the disconnect will show up in many external ways. First, life doesn't go your way. You know, your boss is upset with you and your spouse is not working cooperatively and your friend was rude to you. So first, the cracks start showing up in external ways, and our instinct is to blame everyone, right? My boss is mean, my friend was mean, my spouse is mean, my child is disobedient, and the weather is not being cooperative. Yeah. So we blame the whole external realm for our inner discontent. Yeah. And so this is the first sign that we are internally disconnected. When our external world begins to show up with loud resounding, I'm not helping you, I'm not supporting you, I'm not working well with you, this is how the internal disconnect shows up. So usually at this point, people kind of break down and they go seek help and therapy, and that's a good thing. And then the wise guy, the therapist, the parent, the friend kind of tells the person, you know, these are indications, these are wake up calls for you to go, whoa, what inside me is disconnected and not aligned? Okay, so first you'd have to pay heed to the disconnect, right, is my first message to you. Mm-hmm. So if you're having conflict after conflict with your child, pay heed to that. That's a sign that there's something disconnected within you. And of course, it's easy to blame the kid and punish the kid and discipline the kid. But then what? At the end of the day, the only person who has power to change is you. So you have to then start saying to yourself, how can I start taking that pause in the moment and look in the mirror and not react? The first step is to not react. And the step to not react means to take a pause. And the way to take a pause is to invite yourself to say, for the next 3 days, I'm just going to enter silent mode and just pay attention. So if my child is being rude to me, I'm not going to react and say, why are you being rude to me? Or I'm going to punish you. I'm going to discipline you. I'm just going to listen and say, I hear you. I can see that you're upset. I'm going to watch and see how I've made you upset. And I'm going to pay attention. Just the willingness to turn inward and say, I'm going to pay attention, even though I want to yell at you and scream at you and make you feel bad for making me feel bad.
Yeah.
Instead, I'm going to just not take it personally for a moment and pay attention and begin to see how I'm contributing to your distress. So instead of blaming the world, we begin to turn our eyes inward and begin to ask the pivotal question, which is, how am I contributing to this upheaval in my life?
And as we turn in and we say, how am I doing it? I think you mentioned a bunch of really cool things. Am I taking it personally? Am I blaming? Am I getting angry? Right? Those are all indications that we need to do the work on ourselves.
Exactly. And it takes courage, but in a way, it's so liberating because there's so much power in you changing yourself and making just the slightest tweaks in your internal state. You know, I'll be quiet. I'll take a pause. I'll pay attention. I'll examine my beliefs. I'll look at what's coming up for me. I'll pay attention to my feelings. I'll write in a journal. I'll meditate. I'll talk to a therapist. You know, we can go down the line into how greater and more powerful the self-exploration can be. And each time we make a powerful step towards greater self-exploration, we liberate not only ourselves, but everybody from the responsibility and of making the change for us. So we begin changing and liberating ourselves. And that is ultimately the most powerful thing we can do.
Well, and as you said, and I am such a firm believer in this, you start to control the part of life that you can control and the only part you can control, which is you, right? And when you start making those shifts within yourself, everything around you has the opportunity to change as well.
Exactly. So instead of putting on ourselves the burden to fix every single thing our child does or says, you know, I'm going to fix him when he talks rudely to me. I'm going to fix her when she gets a bad grade. I'm going to fix up their social life. I'm going to control how she feels about every single thing in her life. Instead of putting all this burden on us, all we need to do instead is say, how am I feeling about it? What belongs to me? What belongs to me I keep in my box? And all I need to do is open the space to help my kid express how they feel. Even if you don't give your kid a single tool in life, but you help them have the space to express their feelings, know who it is they are, and feel heard and seen by you, that's huge. That's huge already.
Well, and going back to what we had talked about, I mean, that's the human desire, is to be seen and to be heard and to feel worthy as you are in your uniqueness and your, you know, your greatest self. And so to give that to your child and to experience it for yourself. I mean, it's a beautiful opportunity if you didn't get this as a child to experience this with your child at this point in your life. You can have that relationship be intact in your home.
But we have to first value the present moment. You see, our problem is that whatever experience we have in the present moment, we always want it to either be beautiful or take it to beauty. Inherent in that assumption is that what it is right now is not wholly enough. And especially with painful situations in life, we never want to confront the pain or the shadow emotions of life, because we believe we should clean it up and always be happy or always be beautiful. And I always encourage parents, instead of looking at life as happy or unhappy, we go for the deeper element of joy and ownership and engagement in the whatever is, and to therefore see everything as holy versus as happy and unhappy. We invite whatever is coming up, even if it's a volcano or a storm, and we flow with it. And if we can discipline ourselves to kind of take a deep breath and like enter and surrender this present moment, even if it's a C grade, even if it's tears, even if it's your kid feeling bored or your kid feeling unhappy or self-loathing, or they said they hate you, just enter that and go, okay, you hate me right now. You're not happy right now. This is a valid experience. This is okay. I don't need to clean it up for you. I don't need to change you. I'm okay. I'm okay with you hating me. It's okay in this moment, because it's just a moment. And if you talk to kids, they are so good at saying, well, that was that moment, mom, and now I'm happy again, or that was that moment, and now I love my friend again.
Right.
They can move through feelings because they understand that that was that moment. But we make a big deal out of every moment, and we hold on and fester. And if we can just learn the art of being in this moment and then being in the next moment and not wanting to change and transform things, that'll really help our children feel seen and heard. Because they, you know, how many times our kids tell us, mom, you're not listening to me, or mom, you know, don't talk, listen. Why are they saying that? Because they can see that we're not fully present, and we're already wanting to convert the experience into something else to make us feel better.
Absolutely. And I love the distinction and right to show up and be seen in our truth doesn't mean that it's always perfect and beautiful. It means that sometimes it's really difficult. And that's what is so powerful when you can be comfortable in the difficulties and the positive moments. So, you know, I'm a mom. I have a 10-year-old and I really do practice conscious parenting. I have been doing it since he was born. I didn't know there was a term for it. I love the whole philosophy. To be totally honest, right? Like there are just days where, to speak of what you're saying, like it does get a little ugly. I am triggered. I act rudely or I'm in a bad mood or work has just been too much and he just says that one last thing. What do you do if you say something really regrettable? And you just spoke to this a little bit, but letting that moment sit, it's okay. He's hating me in that moment, but a lot of people do want to fix it, clean it up. What do you do after this is sitting there and the discomfort is palpable?
Right. Well, first is not to expect ourselves to not slip up, right? I think sometimes when we're on a journey, we expect perfectionism. And that comes from a narcissism that we are too grand and too great and our ego is not going to ensnare us. And that's really deluded thinking. It's not living in the moment, because when you live in the moment, you're fully aware that the shadow could creep up at any unbidden moment. And therefore, you surrender to that and you own it. And the more you begin to live in the moment, you become present to it much sooner. So where before it took you a whole day to realize it was all about you, now you're beginning to realize and track it while it's even happening. You may not be able to stop it because it's too delicious sometimes and you want to engage in the ego, and you may not be able to stop it in the moment, but it's okay. But at least you can now witness it.
Yeah.
And therefore the recovery time becomes shorter and shorter. So what do you do now that you have unleashed your ego? It took you, you know, by surprise. You had no control over yourself. Well, the only thing you can do is to live an authentic experience and to own it and tell your kid, okay, boy, wasn't I a crazy monster right now? Like, didn't I go nuts? And your kid will say, yeah, you're crazy. And you go, yeah, totally. That's the ego. That's my unconsciousness. I went nuts. And I'm going to watch that. That had nothing to do with you. I was tired. I was exhausted. And I should learn to either take better care of myself or I need to learn what my trigger is. And you kind of own up to it. But it's more than just saying sorry to your kid. It's really going inside yourself and asking yourself, you know, wow, I guess I was really out of shape today. I was out of alignment. What do I need to do so that I can take more measured steps so that I don't get this far out of alignment? And then the next day, you have to take those steps. You know, it's not just saying sorry to your kid and hugging them at night. They couldn't care less on some level because they are used to living with the unconsciousness of adults. It's about you really taking this work seriously and going, no, 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 no. I'm doing this too many times. Why is this happening? What in within me keeps getting triggered? Where is the lack? Is it in my belief system? Is it in the lack of self-care? Am I not creating boundaries? Am I not truly being honest and authentic with my true life experience? Am I allowing people to walk all over me? Whatever it is, we have to look at it really severely and take ourselves to task and then say, okay, tomorrow I'm going to pay attention. I'm going to make these two changes. I'm going to prepare for it. I'm going to watch for it. And I'm going to try and be measured in my approach toward my unconscious. I'm not going to just be indisciplined. I'm going to be really careful and watch for it. So this is about self-vigilance, self-awareness, self-attunement, self-care. It's a lot of work to do on yourself in order to be in that honorable space of meeting your child's needs.
And I think the really complicated part comes later as you get into this, where you're working on yourself and you're becoming very conscious and you're, you know, noticing the things you're doing. And then all of a sudden that perfectionistic voice comes back and says, particularly I get this joke a lot now that I do this work, you know, if I'm having a bad day and I am complaining about it or I'm mentioning it or I notice it within myself, you know, people will say, oh, come on, Laura, practice what you preach. Don't add any emotional weight, right? Like you're supposed to take only authentic decisions. And I mean, I think we're all human, right? Like this is a process that I call them emotional workouts, because we need to, just like the gym, you know, you sometimes eat too much at the holidays, you feel terrible, you don't go to the gym as much. And sometimes with emotional stuff, you kind of backlog a little, it's stressful, and then you just need to get back on track.
Do you right. feel- People, yeah, people will project all these, you know, perfectionistic ideals onto you because you're a leader in a movement, and in their naivety will presume that now you are, you know, you are supposed to be absent of the struggle. The struggle is not supposed to exist in you anymore. And that is just a projection of people, and it's going to keep happening. It happens to me all the time. People think that I'm eternally calm, and they put all these insane and undoable, really, goals and ideals on me. And it just shows that they are not understanding that we can only teach this because we struggle with this every day. Mm-hmm. And if we didn't know how to maneuver the struggle, we won't know how to teach the goals. And the goal cannot exist without the struggle, right? The perfection or the aspiration for perfection cannot exist without a real know-how of the trenches and of the depth of the madness. So how can you help people gain success if you haven't helped them with the struggle? Mm-hmm. And you can only help them with the struggle if you know the struggle intimately. So people who look at teachers and gurus or masters of any profession and presume that that teacher should be devoid of struggle, it's just their own naivety and projection of wanting perfection. But they have to understand that there is no perfection destination. It is only a daily confrontation with the struggle and a decision that, okay, today I'm going to do the struggle a little differently. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the only thing that separates a master from a survivor, is their decision to do the struggle differently. But to presume that there is no struggle, that's just plain naivety.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So I would love to hear, we talk about these few questions in each podcast, because the idea is, right, that there's a lot of success in the world. And what does that mean if you have success without authenticity is the real focus of this podcast. I would love to hear from you. You know, what does an authentic life mean to you personally?
An authentic life really means, on a moment-to-moment basis, a day-to-day basis, where I can get up each day and own it, own the whole day and be in it and be present, not be in a state of resistance, be in a state of acceptance and flow. And, you know, if I'm lying down and being lazy, I'm owning it. If I'm overworked and stressed about a project, I'm owning it. And I'm seeing the holiness in every moment. You know, if I'm looking outside and it's dreary and raining, I'm able to find the holiness of it. If I'm overeating and overdrinking, I'm able to enter the body, own it, and find the holiness of this moment. And, you know, not strive for some utopic balance or live somebody else's life. Really decide that if today was my last day, I'm fully here and I'm fully ready and there's nothing much left undone. If there's a friend I want to connect with, I've connected with them. If a person has come to my mind, I've reached out to them. Whatever's coming up in this moment is kind of complete. And even though the grand, you know, the 10 grand projects are still dangling in the air, whatever I could have done today has been done. And I'm feeling pretty complete and connected and engaged. So that to me is living an authentic life. It's nothing to do with how much money I'm bringing in or how many medals I'm earning or how many stages I'm speaking on. It's really about, am I fully here right now today? And it could be an extraordinary day or an ordinary day, but am I fully present today?
I love that. And you talk about childhood through adulthood. Was your path to having an authentic life, that all this work that you've done, was it a straight line or did you have a big turning point moment?
It was everything, you know, it was an unfolding is how I like to call it. It was a gradual, and it is a gradual unfolding. And there's so much more to learn and so many loopholes to uncover and so many traps that still come up in me. You know, I don't know. It was just my path. I was lucky in one way that I didn't have parents with too big of projections onto me. So I didn't have to uncover a whole lot. But I'm still surprised that given that my childhood was pretty benign and my parents were pretty spacious and open, I still am kind of messed up. So I'm just always amazed and humbled when I see my daughter kind of be sorted and put together. I'm just like, wow, she's kind of put together, even though I'm so messed up. And I'm just amazed at how messed up I am despite my parents. And it's just fascinating to me And it just shows me that our children are infinitely resilient and that no matter what, we always have issues, right? No matter my parents being fabulous and pretty decent parents, I still have issues. Because it's not just about this lifetime. You know, I believe we pack on things over many generations of pain. And it may not have come through my family, but it may have come through the culture that I absorb some pain. Mm-hmm. It may have not come through my parents, but it may have come through their lack of awareness of how to help me, say, with a friend. You know, so our pain comes from many places. And we can be messed up in many ways that have nothing directly to do with our parents, but maybe they just didn't know how to help us. So to be easy on ourselves as parents, to forgive our own parents, and just to look at what's coming up in the moment as is, and just go, whoa, you know, I'm kind of crazy in this moment. And to be easy on ourselves and not judge ourselves too much, but just take it in stride. Everyone has a shadow box, and everyone has to explore it at their own time.
And as you're out there and you're working, giving talks, you know, going around and doing TV and all the things you're doing, I mean, there's stress and you have a family and you're busy. How do you stop yourself from allowing the stress and the fears to take over and tilt the balance that you found in accepting these moments? Is it just the awareness that you've cultivated over years of doing it?
Well, you know, in my early years, there was more unconsciousness, of course, and I didn't know how to navigate myself, my family, my relationships, my career, and I used to mess it all up, and the lines used to get blurry. And then through practice, so it does take practice, and so I always tell people, expect to mess up a whole lot. And then as you grow and become more sturdy through practice, through time, you begin to learn to really know when to say yes and when to say no. Mm. So every invitation that comes on my desk, you know, even saying yes to you, every email I answer, I'm pausing and deciding, you know, do I want to own it? Do I see the worth in it? Do I see the mutual reciprocity in it? Am I fully willing to say that if I don't make a single dollar out of it, or if I don't make a single anything out of it, I, in that moment, am ready to be fully present and engaged, and it's worthy of my time. And then I say yes. And if I don't say yes to my checkboxes of worthiness, engagement, purpose, does it fit in with my big scheme of things, with my family, then I say no. Mm-hmm. So I don't take on anything as a martyr anymore. You know, I'm not a martyr anymore. I'm not a victim anymore. I used to be a glorified martyr and victim, and I used to get a rise out of it. But now I see no value in it. You know, I don't say yes. And if I'm going to take on a big project and I'm overstressed and tired, that's my problem. It's not my daughter's problem. It's not my husband's problem. It's my issue. So I fully own it. And then I tell myself, you know, if you're going to crib and cry about it, don't do it. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to do it, it's on you. Don't be a martyr about it. Nobody's, you know, going to be saved because of you. You know, your duty is to your happiness and to your kid and to your relationship. And if you can't pull this together, then don't do anything. You know, then go and, you know, mow lawns or don't, you know, because people in you're in my professions, there's this narcissistic ideal that we're saving people's lives. And, you know, we're not saving anyone's lives unless we're fully okay with our own.
Yeah.
So there's no grandeur in me anymore. There's no naivety. There's no martyrdom, no victimhood. I'm doing this for me. And if it doesn't work for me, I don't do it. And that's it.
I love it. I love it. I love it. And if you don't mind, could you elaborate a little bit when you say you go through your checklist of how you decide a yes, but do you check how you feel in your body? Like, do you also, is it a mental process or is it also a physical?
It's both. So if, say, I've been saying yes many times in that week and now I'm tired and I'm like, you know what, I can't do another interview or I can't do another whatever the request is, then I just can't, you know. So if mentally it's okay for me, but physically I can't, then I can't, you know. I just took a huge hiatus for a good 25 days and I said no to a lot of income opportunities because I was physically exhausted. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, I'm taking a brain freeze. I'm taking a checkout time. I'm 25 days. I told everyone, I went from the 20th of December. I don't think I even took an email till the 16th or 17th of January. I just like checked out.
Yeah.
And so you learn to regulate your body. You amp it up when you need to amp it up, but then you really slow it down when you need to. So trusting that the universe will still hold you and you'll have a net is imperative, you know, and that develops. Not everyone can have that net because they're in survivor mode, you know. So I'm not sitting here on my pedestal saying, you know, learn, just let go of your job and let go of income. But there is something to be said for getting out of survivor mode. And many of us are on that treadmill of life, the conveyor belt of surviving. And it's hard to take that leap into luxury mode. But if people can dare to move from survivor to kind of self-ownership, luxury business model, entrepreneurship mode, and feel more control, yes, they may have to give up some income in the interim period, but then life changes for them. You know, I've been in survivor mode and it wasn't pretty. It was ugly and it was hard. And I had to take risks to get into entrepreneur business, owning my own life mode. But there is a payoff at the end. But it does take high vigilance and entering the body, knowing what it is we want and daring to make those changes.
Absolutely. And I mean, I took the leap out of a life that, you know, I had justified. It's very stressful and difficult, but there's just nothing more rewarding on the other side. And so now that you're in this place of success and you've worked so much on authenticity, do you have daily practices, any habits that you could share? Do you have favorite apps? Do you have tools? Like, do you have anything that you could share with the audience that helps you on a day-to-day basis?
I think, you know, I'm always learning. So there's always, you know, my spiritual books next to me. If I'm in despair, I will go to spiritual websites. I'll go to my favorite teachers, reach out for solace, get realigned. But I think the most important daily practice is a constant self-vigilance. So I meditate every day, thrice a day. I'm constantly trying to be self-aware. So then when I'm out of sync, I notice it immediately. When I'm out of sorts, I can pay attention. I can correct in the moment. You know, sometimes I just tell myself, you know, you're doing way too much damage to yourself. You just need to go to sleep, you know, because you're too much in your own way. And yeah. Sometimes I just go to sleep because I am a mess and I can't get out of my way. And I'm just cogitating too much. And then I wake up, I meditate, I write, I eat well. You know, it's what everyone does and what stood true in the test of time. I'm no special person. I have to work at it every single day. But it is a day-to-day realignment. And there isn't a day that goes by that I haven't meditated at least two or three times, checked in, done something spiritual, tried to exercise, eat really healthy, try at least, and really look out at nature, look at the sky. It's just the more you do it, the more of a muscle it becomes. It's not something you even think about. It just becomes more of you than the unconscious you, you know?
Absolutely. Dr. Shefali, so much incredible information here. Do you have any final words that you want to share?
No, I just think I admire your work, you know, emotional obesity. I remember when I met you, I was so struck by that terminology, that phrase, because I think that's so true. We layer ourselves emotionally. So kudos to you and your work and what you're putting out there, because you are really getting to the heart of what it means to live an authentic life. And you see how people are damaged when they don't allow their true self to emerge. So really, I'm so proud of you and happy to be part of this journey with you. And, you know, for your listeners to know that I fully endorse and admire what you do. So you're the one who's really the superstar here.
Oh, thank you. Very generous of you. I appreciate the kind words. And if people want to find out more, hear more about you, find out where your next event is, where can they go?
Well, I'm speaking all over the country now because of my new book that's coming out end of May, May 31st. It's called The Awakened Family, A Revolution in Parenting. We're doing a 5-city tour. We're coming to Chicago, San Francisco, LA, Washington, and New York. And, you know, wide audiences are going to come and hear the message of conscious parenting and create a revolution in their own lives. They can find me on my website, drshefali.com, on my Facebook page, Dr. Shefali. And, you know, my goal is really to create a community of parents who can support and gain wisdom from each other.
Well, I'm definitely going to be at the Chicago event, and I'm a huge fan of your work. You're doing just incredible stuff, spreading the word about the importance of the role of a parent in our child's life and how to really bring the powerful message that we can give to our children. And I thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.